talking about guys like Jeremy, Hazel, or is it Hazelbaker, and Diaz, who we talked about before.
I think
And
it's pronounced not gonna work here, Baker.
okay, that works too. Yeah, small sample size, Baker. We could do this all night.
Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Good evening, and welcome to episode 87 of Flags Fly Forever, a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus, and as always, I'm joined by BP's managing editor, Brett Sayer, and Mike Gianella of the BP Fantasy Team. Guys, how's it going tonight?
Good. Good. How are you?
I'm doing better now that Mookie Betts is starting to hit. I'll tell you that. Finally.
Weren't you saying before the show you have him on your bench?
Yeah, my rule of thumb is once you get below 200, after a couple of weeks, it's hard to keep you in my lineup. So I benched Mookie Betts today for the first time all year. He's like 2 for 2 with a walk and a home run off Archer so far. So this is why you should never try and do anything in a fantasy league. Just whenever you have the instinct to do something, just do the opposite.
Yeah, or if you have the instinct to do what George is going to do the opposite.
My thinking in fantasy is generally doing nothing, particularly after your draft or auction, is better than doing something. It's always the fine tuning. Yeah, I remember last year, Brett, we benched Ian Desmond. He was slumping, and he was facing Clayton Kershaw and Zach Greinke that week, and we had left him in all year, and we finally benched him. I think he hit like 2 home runs.
I think he hit 3.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah.
I think that proves my point even more.
I wasn't thrilled about the Archer matchup, so I made a gut call. And Billy Hamilton, who I subbed in, went 0-for-4, so that's a good move.
Well,
so
this is an important thing. When I think Mike's on the same page as me. I firmly believe that if you have a top, 100 player overall, they should never be out of your lineup. If they're out of your lineup, they should be off your team.
That's a good point. Solid take there. I agree with that for the most part.
I mean that's kind of it. Like in we get into this like in labor we sat Buxton for Colby Rasmus, but some of that was the injury, and some of that is you're talking about two very good hitters, and some of it was a 7-game week for Rasmus versus a 6-game week for Buxton in week 2. So there were a lot of decisions there. It wasn't just that we were panicking on Buxton. If you're at that point where you're panicking about a player in week 3, that's where I agree with Brett. You probably shouldn't even have had him on your team in the first place.
You mean Colby Rasmus of the 1006 OPS?
Yeah. Our reserve pick, right?
This is amazing. I'm going to read this off because I find it absolutely fascinating. These are Colby Rasmus's strikeout to walk rates in the last 5 seasons, starting in 2012: 149 to 47, 135 to 39, 135 to 37, 124 to 29, 154 to 47. So, obviously there's a clear trend here, and this year he has 12 walks and 13 strikeouts, 52 plate appearances.
Brett's fired up. This is going to be an awesome show. I'm very excited about this.
So not only is his strikeout – no, this doesn't mean anything yet, but not only so far is his strikeout rate down, but his walk rate is incredibly up. He has a 442 on-base percentage.
He's reached base in, what, 14 out of 15 games to start the year, something like that?
I don't have that page up.
He's been awesome.
Yeah, I'd have to go look it up. Yeah, he's been really good. I think with
he's
Colby
not
Rasmus,
coming out of our lineup.
He's, oh no! He's... Well, if anything, if I were going to sit somebody for Buxton at the moment, it would be A-Rod.
Yeah. Yeah, he's been on the struggle bus big time.
Yeah, he hit a home run, but otherwise he hasn't been so good.
Not a top 100 player.
Neither is Buxton, and of course we're except for steals where we have Billy Hamilton, we're dominating an offense.
So while we're on the subject, we have one Twitter question that came in. It's from Daniel Halder. He wants to know, what do you do about Chris Archer? If you're sitting him, why? If you're trying to move him, what should you be trying to get? I mean, Archer tonight, his ERA is 7.32. He gave up 6 runs against the Red Sox. Through 4 starts, he's over 7 with the ERA. Are either of you guys concerned about a pitcher like him? I know another guy like that's Adam Wainwright. Especially with pitchers off the slow starts, guys that you drafted thinking they were going to be studs. How long before you're a little bit concerned, and what are you looking for specifically if you're looking at their profiles or their outings?
For pitchers like that who are, top 20 options, maybe, I guess, if you're not a big Wainwright fan, maybe top 25 options, you're not really seriously evaluating them until mid-May, probably Memorial Day. I am not, pretty much if anyone asks me if I'm concerned about a pitcher in my preseason top 30 or 40, unless they are showing something seriously noticeable, like a huge drop in velocity, or they're not using a major pitch in a substantial way, I'm just not going to be worried. And I'm going to keep plugging them into the lineup. I'm not going to budge on that.
Same.
With Archer, what I'm looking at with the difference between Archer and Wainwright, from what I've seen and read about Archer, it's a command issue, but he's getting strikeouts, and that brings value to my fantasy team. So even though I'm taking a hit in the ERA and WHIP, and I'm not getting wins in a wins league, I still want those strikeouts from him, unless it's a really shallow league. Wainwright's somebody, because he's not getting the strikeouts and because the velocity, it's not down from last year, but it's down from his peak. I'd consider sitting him if I have the bench slot in a deep mix. But to your point, Brett, if it's a matter of cutting him, if it's a choice between either cutting Wainwright or sucking along, I agree that May 1st is the absolute earliest I'm going to do that. I've started putting together a piece for next week on slow April starters from 2015. And what you find with a lot of these guys is most of them bounce back. And the ones that don't bounce back, it's almost always a case of injury. So, it's really a tough thing to do, to just give up on a guy. And I'd agree with you, Brad. I'd say anybody in the top 25, top 30, if you're talking about a really deep mixer and only, you just have to ride them out. You really can't, now is not the time to sell low, or, worse yet, just to cut them and see somebody else reap the rewards.
Yep, exactly.
All right, so you can read all of us at baseballperspectives.com. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. That's 2 S's and 2 L's. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. You can email us, flagsflyforever@baseballperspectives.com. Finally, please subscribe, rate, review us on iTunes, Stitcher, radio app, whatever you're using to listen to us. We appreciate all of that. So what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back, dive into the fab bidding. We have a special segment, Things We Believe In, Players to Target, that we're going to talk about a little bit later. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after the break. And we're back here on Flags Fly Forever, and we're going to throw things over to Mike and Brett a little bit here. We're going to do the fab betting. We're going to start with Labor Mixed, which is the team that Brett and Mike co-owned. They won the league last year, in case you didn't know. So you guys didn't buy anyone this week.
Nope. We've been sitting on our money a little bit.
We spent $1 on Nate Jones the week before, and other people have been spending, and for the most part, we might need a starter at some point to stream. We've sat our Dickey the last 2 weeks because the matchups have been bad. But yeah, for the most part, our offense has gone well. The pitching, for the most part, has gone pretty well. We're even getting saves from, Wade Davis and Andrew Miller, so we haven't had a pressing need to make a move. I think we're in third or fourth right now, Brett, but we have a lot of points, and it's early, so we're not looking at it like we have to do anything significant.
Yeah, and we had the unexpected Nate Jones save, the 2-inning that was nice.
That's part of why we're doing so well in saves. Miller, as you predicted more than I did, is picking up a healthy amount of saves. while Chapman's out. You know, Wade Davis had one outing where his command was iffy, but otherwise has looked like Wade Davis. And yeah, we've been fine in saves.
Yeah, it's amazing that Miller is pitching with not a full on, but a partially broken hand. And he has 13 strikeouts, has given up no runs, and has a 0.33 whip.
I'd be in, you know, forget about pitching baseball. I'd be taking off of work for 2 or 3 days and on all the painkillers you could imagine, you know, not throwing a baseball.
Yeah, that is, it is impressive.
Can you imagine how scary they're going to be once they get Chapman back? I mean, Betances has been lights out, too. They're striking everyone out. It's a crazy good bullpen.
My hot take when we and this shocked I showed this to Tristan Cockrell, my hot take about the Yankees, I picked them to lose the World Series, and it's not included in the BP picks because you just see the winner. The mentality was they'd limp into the playoffs, and then that bullpen would take them far.
It could happen. I mean, I can't rule that out.
That's if they make the playoffs. The downside for them is they could win 83 to 85 games and, you know, be on the outside looking in.
All right, enough real baseball. Let's talk fake baseball. Aledmys Diaz was the big pickup. Jared Saltalamacchia, the only other guy in double digits. Brett, either of these guys of interest to you? What do you think of those moves?
Yeah, Saltalamacchia. Yeah, and part of this is because I am just not a believer in James McCann. Not that he couldn't play every day when he's healthy, but I don't think he's particularly good. I think Saltalamacchia has a real chance to pick up some substantial playing time for the rest of the season. A two catcher league, I think. You know, I think it's a strong bid. I think it's a good bid. I don't know who picked up Saltalamacchia. Like team,
I'm trying to see if I included it in the article or not, because sometimes I do, and sometimes
I don't believe it is. Good move though, whoever did. Nice pickup.
Someone with a good move. I'm not an Aledmys Diaz fan.
Yeah, me neither.
And not because I don't think he can hit a little bit. He sucks on defense. He really sucks. There's no two ways about it. I don't think part of the reason why the Cardinals didn't go with Jed Jerko full time at shortstop after Peralta went down is because they didn't trust his shortstop defense. I think they're going to get to the same place with Diaz, which is going to leave them in a really weird roster spot. But I think Ruben Tejada is going to end up with most of the playing time until Peralta comes back. So I'm not buying Diaz in a deep mix in an NL only. You have to, but I'm not super optimistic there.
As a Mets fan, how weird is that statement that Ruben Tejada is going to get a majority of the playing time for the Cardinals at shortstop? Like, if I told you a year ago that you'd be saying that now, how weird would that seem?
It would seem pretty weird.
Yep.
Yeah. Although the Mets in, you know, back to real baseball in July, this is one of my favorite things ever. In July of 2015. They had John Mayberry back cleanup twice against Clayton Kershaw. That it's a very different team right now than it was even back in July.
Yeah, very much so.
Okay, Malik Smith, $9. We think he's going to steal a ton of bases. I haven't been that impressed with his base-stealing acumen. He's been caught a couple times, I believe. How many bases do you think he steals? Like, if you had to put a number on it right now. I know, Mike, you did the call-up on him, so what do you think of Smith?
Well, I like Smith as a player, although since I've seen him play after doing the call-up, it looks like the adjustment curve's a little bit steeper than some of the scouting folks were thinking based on what I'd read about him, and I hadn't seen him in the minors. I'm going to go with 20 steals. I believe there's a possibility now, if he keeps striking out at the rate he's striking out, that he's going to get sent down when NCRD gets back. I always believed he could stay up, but if he's doing that, if he's making poor contact, which is a big part of his game, I think he goes back down. They stop the service time clock, and there's a little bit more refinement before he's up for good either later this year or in 2017.
What say you, Brett?
Yeah, I think that number might be less than 20, and a good portion of it might come in September. I don't think Smith can hit. I know there are people who are pretty high on Smith. The speed is great, but I don't think he can hit. I think this is a bad version of Billy Hamilton scenario without the Billy Hamilton speed. And I don't, you know, I'm not particularly optimistic about Maddux, even with the outfield that is ahead of him in Atlanta.
See, Billy Hamilton can't hit either. So, it doesn't matter. The difference is Hamilton has guaranteed playing time. With Smith, it's not guaranteed for a couple of reasons.
Well, no, the biggest difference is that Billy Hamilton is a near elite defensive center fielder.
Yes.
Maddux Smith is he's okay.
All right, not much to see there. Any of you guys believe in Matt Latos? Because I don't at all. I am running as far away from him as I can. I can't say that I buy it.
I'm kind of buying it.
Oh God.
Oh boy. So we actually have something to discuss.
Some disagreement. I like it.
Why are you buying it? I'm curious.
I'm kind of buying it because this is sort of the second wave here, and I'm certainly not going to invest much in him just because it's Matt Latos, but there's I think about this in context of Josh Beckett, and it's not a great corollary, but it's the same idea that Beckett was a hard thrower when he was young and he was great, and Latos was never quite Josh Beckett good, but Beckett absolutely sucked for a couple of seasons because he was the exact same pitcher, but he didn't have the velocity anymore. And with someone who has sort of the early career track record like Latos does, and who is who's cheap. I mean, to the cheap part is the really important part. But when he comes back and is using more, when he's changing his approach and pitching in a different way, even with really diminished velocity, because he has very diminished. I think he's averaging like 91 on his fastball, as opposed to the like 94 and 95
You have to look it up, but that might be generous.
Yeah, it's at least 3 to 4 miles an hour less than his heyday, and I think at least 1 to 2 miles an hour less than last year. But he's pitching differently. He's throwing more. He's throwing more sliders. He's throwing more non-four-seam fastballs, which is good for him, because if he throws a lot of four-seam fastballs, he's going to get smacked around. And I'm starting to think that there's a pretty good chance that Latos finishes as a top, 60 or 70 starter this year. I'm not quite there yet, but I'm getting there, and I think I'm going to let myself get there.
Yeah, not saying it's not possible. Just I want to see more with Latos. That's all. Someone to really watch.
That's the problem with Latos, right? If you can label him as someone to watch, and we're guilty of this too, because we stood on our hands in labor this week, and we wouldn't have gotten him even if we put on in a bid for him, but. Everybody standing around waiting to see if he's for real, they're all going to miss him.
True.
He's going to be rostered everywhere. And there's
that's part of the game theory, aspect to it.
I agree with that in terms of the game theory, but the counter argument to that, and we'll get to this with another pitcher we'll discuss in the NL, the peripherals are bad. The strikeout rate is low. He's in a terrible, I don't want to say terrible, but he's in a bad park for pitchers. He's not in the greatest division. He's out of the National League. I think he can be fine, but what I'd like to see with a pitcher like this is something, either in the strikeout rate or the home runs or the home run to fly ball, where I'm like, okay, even though the numbers aren't matching the peripherals, there's something to build on here. And I do agree, Brett, he, from a veteran's perspective, he could be that guy who figures something out. he just isn't somebody that I really want to go along with the ride for. I think if we had fabbed him for a buck or two, and you pointed this out, I wouldn't have got him. If we had fabbed him for a buck or two in labor and then stashed him, I would have been fine with that. Beyond that, in a league with no $0 bids, the risk to me was a little bit too high.
Well, sure. And that would have been, if we were bidding, I would have probably, I might have gone up to three, but that would have been, that
yeah, three's okay. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Joely Chacin and Christian Vasquez in the mono league sides of things, so I won't hit on them now. The rest of these guys were all $5 or less. Guys like Kike Hernandez, Eduardo Nunez, Ross Stripling making another appearance. Anybody either you guys want to talk about from the rest of this group that you maybe thought about putting in a bid on or that you like?
Well, we thought about Chacin, but we can talk about him in the National League, I think. I don't think there was anybody else here. You know, we have Chris Iannetta, but we didn't consider Vasquez or any catchers for that matter. And yeah, the pitchers here, you know, JJ Hardy is an upgrade on his Drubal Cabrera. No, you know, same thing with a lot of these hitters. And I like Adonis Garcia, and I'm writing something positive about him for tomorrow's BP for these Things I Believe or This Thing I Believe series. But with our team, he's not a fit.
Brett, what was the CBS projection on Garcia that they had him for with home runs?
I think it was 26 homers.
It's 25 or 26, and I know that because I pulled that to compare projections on him after I bought him in town. Yeah, that's I like Garcia, and even liking Garcia, that's quite a bit much.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Yeah, I want to touch on Eduardo Nunez really, really quickly, just because I don't, you know, I've been kind of poking at it on Twitter a little bit because I always have one side eye on Eduardo Nunez, mostly because I do think he can hit, and he's just never really shown it at the major league level in any extended sense, but he is batting leadoff for the Twins consistently now and will be with Plouffe injured, and he is base hits just dropping in left and right for him. And while that's not going to continue, he's also stolen 3 bases in 10 games. So batting leadoff, stealing bases, a guy who has a pretty natural hit tool, and a whole bunch of question marks on that Twins team. I think he could be a really interesting guy in deep leagues this year. He's someone who I have an eye out on.
There was one big trade in labor mixed. It involves Trevor Story. What'd you guys think of that one? Mike, you wrote about it. What'd you think?
Well,
give the deal? Or
sure, it was Trevor Story and Curtis Granderson for Patrick Corbin and Randall Grichuk. And my take on the trade was when Jake Seeley of Roto Experts picked Story up, I thought, well, he should trade him quickly because he has offense. He needs a pitcher. I actually like the trade a little bit better for Doug Anderson of FNTSY because I like Granderson better than Grichuk. And Corbin is solid, but he's not particularly a high-end arm for me. I know Brett, I believe, likes Corbin better than I do. But the idea behind the trade of flipping Story and getting out while the getting's good, I think is a solid idea. So, you know, the trade's fine. It fits Jake's needs. It fits Doug's needs. And it's a good example of using your fab aggressively and then as opposed to sitting on the guy and, you know, either having him flame out or building up an excess that you don't need, kind of making the move to address a need.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I don't think there's anything wrong with Story. I don't think there is any, you know, there's a big difference between wanting to kind of make some profit on someone before there are adjustments, and there certainly will be adjustments with Story. We've seen it a little bit already, but I, you know, this just reiterates the fact that this is not the situation where, you know, everyone has to get out from underneath Trevor Story at all costs. You know, Story's gonna have that job for a little while, and he's got the pop and he's got cores. So this is, you know, he's been good enough and stuck in a good enough spot in the lineup that I think even when Jose Reyes does come back, I think he's going to stick and get some time. Where that is, nobody knows, but I think the bar should be reasonably high for cashing in Story, because, you know, because he should have a fair amount of value for the rest of the season, and you know, additionally in a keeper or dynasty format.
Brett, you made a couple of moves in Tout Mixed. Picked up JJ Hardy. You're aggressive with Chase Anderson. You made a trade for Jesse Winker. Which one of those moves do you think is the most important, or what do you think about those moves you made this week?
The most important move was probably picking up Chase Anderson. I needed another starter who could get me some strikeouts. You know, Anderson has his weaknesses, and he probably won't get any wins. But my pitching staff skews towards wins guys rather than strikeout guys, and I'm you know, I talked about this a little bit in the write-up that I sent to Mike for the article, and strikeouts is a category that you can't really mess around too much with in a mixed league. You know, if you're behind in strikeouts, it's not like an only league where you can pick up a starter or two and you know you can pick up ground. I mean, if you want to pick up ground in the mixed league, you either have to act fast or you have to pick up some really big strikeout guys. And so rather than having to paint myself into a corner later on, I made a big play for someone who has strikeout potential, had a two-start week this week. I felt like I needed to jumpstart things a little bit. And, you know, I like spending fab early as a general rule of thumb. I mean, it turns out the 167 was much more than I needed to bid, but I didn't want to be outbid.
I know how that feels, and I did the same thing in the National League.
That's such as life. Yeah, that's part of doing fab. But I'm also excited about the Jesse Winker trade. I think that's we own Winker as sort of our last guy off the bench in labor. Also, I just think he'll be up somewhat soon, and I think he'll be a pretty solid hitter right away. He's got, you know, he's got a good approach. He's got a good hit tool. He's got a good park that he's going to come up in. You know, I think he could hit like an outfield four almost immediately, depending on what the Reds do with him and what lineup position they put him in.
This is a related Twitter question we got earlier tonight. It's from Brian Buttrey. He wants to know who's the best minor league stash right now that can help in redraft leagues. It's related to Winker, I think. So who do you think, Brett, is the best guy out there that people should be stashing in a redraft?
Yeah, I still think it's AJ Reed. I know Tyler White's been better than people have expected, but I don't think Houston is going to. I don't think Houston's going to get in the way of getting their top prospect up there reasonably soon, if he's ready. And Reed certainly looks the part.
Mike, anybody for you?
I was going to say Reed, and, you know, some of it is White has already fallen off a little bit. This doesn't mean that the Astros are going to, you know, bring Reed up tomorrow, but, you know, we kind of knew that Tyler White wasn't going to be this superstar, you know, and I'm not saying to denigrate White. He's excelled at every level. I think there's a place for him somewhere, but if Reed hits, he's definitely the guy for me. I know it sounds like a cop-out, but he was the one on the tip of my tongue before Brett said it.
Nice. Brett, did you have anyone else? I'm sorry if I cut you off.
I think he's pretty clearly the guy. I think that, you know, obviously to do a little plug, I mean, JJ's been writing the stash list this year at BP, and he's been doing a great job. I think that I think it's some of the other bigger names are slightly slightly further away, and I don't know, you know, we saw this last year with when different players got called up. Some got called up much earlier than expected, some got called up much later than expected, so it's becoming, you know, it's becoming very team dependent as to when these guys come up, because some teams are much more cognizant of service time, some are not. It's you know, it's become something much more difficult to predict than just this guy's hitting in the minors, there's no one above him in the you know, in the pecking order. Mm-hmm. But I like, you know, Reed's really the guy. I think Tyler Glasnow is going to be up reasonably soon, but with the Pirates, it may not be until mid-June. I don't know what the Twins are going to do with Jose Berrios. Rumor is Trey Turner's not coming up until June. If he, you know, he's the guy who I think is competing with Reed for the top spot there. He's been on fire in AAA, and you know, I'm not sure how motivated Mike Rizzo is to make that switch, even though Danny Espinosa is just not very good.
Yeah, and I was going to bring up Turner, and you know, what I've heard about Turner, to your point, Brett, and it's kind of weird for a team like the Nationals, although they're the Nationals, is that they're kind of looking at a Super 2, which, if that's the case, we're not going to see him until June. So it's something that a team like that in contention shouldn't be considering. It's also a rumor, so maybe it's not true, but to your point, that's something you have to kind of look at.
No, the problem with Turner is that it's not his Super 2, it's his service time, because he spent time in the majors last year. Right. The Nationals pretty much have to hold, you know, it's the whole Chris Bryant, Evan Longoria thing.
Okay, where, and then I either misread that or I misquoted it. Yeah, okay.
Because he got 40-something days on the active roster last year, which means that if they're going to get the extra year of service time out of Turner, they have to keep him down until the first week of June, I think.
Okay. That makes more sense. Yeah. So it's, but to the point stands, they're looking at June, which, you know, for a team in contention really isn't something they should be doing, particularly with the guys that are rolling out there, but they're doing it. So yeah, I might pick Turner over Reed if you were just talking about fantasy impact this year, but if you're talking about or trying to predict how many games a player is going to get, I think Reed's a better bet.
Well, the good news for the Nationals, if Bryce Harper keeps doing what he's doing with all those Papa slams, they're not gonna need Trey Turner. They're gonna be
George. We're gonna ban you from the show if you ever say Papa slam again.
I just Papa slammed you all. Just want you to know, Brett. We haven't had you on since Nomar Mazara got called up, but he just looks like the chillest dude ever. He's awesome. If you could give me one word to describe him, what would it be?
One word to describe Nomar Mazara,
or a sentence. Yeah. I'll give you some latitude.
I'll take the sentence. Mazara just looks like some players get called up and they look like prospects. Some players get called up and they look like major leaguers. Mazara looks like a major leaguer. And it sounds, you know, it sounds reductive, and it sounds like something that Murray Chass would write, but he looks like a major leaguer, and if you watch him, you know exactly what I mean. He looks ready.
Yeah, we did the Things We Believe series this week. It's up at Baseball Prospectus if everybody wants to go check it out. And one of my three was Nomar Mazara, and the fun fact I had about him was he's had twice as many hits with two strikes with six as he has strikeouts in two strike counts with three. That's crazy. You don't see that out of a 20-year-old. He's literally the youngest player in the major leagues right now. It's insane. So very excited about Mazara. Mike, let's go to the NL. Tout Wars NL. Jolie Chacin, my boy, you went big. We talked about it a little over the weekend. Maybe you went a little too big, but you got your guy.
Well, I went big in light of some of the aggressive bids that – well, there are a couple reasons I went big. So there had been some aggressive bids previously, in Tout Wars, and you know, we're talking about guys like Jeremy, you know, Hazelers and Hazelbaker and Diaz, who we talked about before.
And I think it's pronounced not gonna work here, Baker.
Okay, that works too. Yeah, small sample size, Baker. We could do this all night. But
that was awesome.
But I kind of looked at it, and I had a really bad pitching week. And I talked about this in the post. I wasn't panicking, but we talked about Wainwright before. He's the centerpiece of a staff that doesn't have an ace. There's some other pitchers. You know, Steven Matz had a bad outing. He came back with a very good outing. I think my pitching's going to be fine. But at this point, if it isn't fine, and with the reserve rules in Tout where you can stream a guy, you know, back and forth, and you can move people, you know, up and down, I like the idea of going after volume and strikeouts. You know, Tout NL is similar to Mix that you were talking about, Brett, with strikeouts, where you don't fall too far behind. And with wins, where quite honestly, I don't have a lot of pitchers on very good teams. I've got a number of Phillies. I've got a Brewer. You know, and I have Shaquin. I didn't want to be in that position where I was struggling in wins because it's such a mercurial category. So, you know, George kind of sold me on him.
Oh boy!
But the more I dug into the numbers, the more I was intrigued. The velocity has ticked up a little bit this year. He's throwing strikes. He's pounding the zone. He gets to face the NL East. It's a shame he doesn't get to face the Braves. Keep in mind we're talking about NL only. But the thing that really jumped out at me, I didn't realize, and George, I never answered this question for you. What do you think Shaquin's lifetime ERA outside of Coors is? Do you guys want to take a guess?
3.2.
George?
I was going to say it was under 3 because I know he's been good on the road.
Brett is almost exactly right. It's 3.22.
Yep.
The guy has pitched very well outside of Coors, and he is now outside of Coors. This doesn't mean he's going to put up a 3.2,
well,
but in NL only, if he puts up a 3.5 and, you know, does that with a fairly decent strikeout rate, he plays. So the long and short of it is that, you know, I don't want to oversell Julius Shaquin. This is an NL only. But for the position I was in and with the needs I had, he worked really well for what I was looking to do.
I'll give you guys my Shaquin quick take in a minute. But Brett, any thoughts on Shaquin? Have you watched him at all, or do you not care?
I actually have not. I have not seen him yet this year. I get it. Of that level guy, you know, that's the type of profile that I'd like to invest in. But I'm not particularly enthralled with him. I think the Braves are just really a terrible baseball team, and you know, it would be pretty cool if they did let him pitch against the Braves. It seems unfair that he can't.
And we're back here in the bottom of the fourth. Chassin's staying on the mound to pitch for the Cardinals now.
No, but I really like him as an NL only pickup. I'm the strikeouts, I don't think, are going to be there for him to be a, you know, a realistic mixed league play for particularly long, you know, as anything more than a fire extinguisher. But
I think he's a in a 15 team mixed, I see him as a streamer and not as a guy that you want in there week in and week out.
Yeah, see, I've watched his last two starts. I agree with that assessment. If you want to stream him, you know, in the right matchups in mixed leagues, I can see that. But he's an NL-only guy for me. And the thing I like about Chassin is that I don't want to say he didn't care in Colorado, but he never looked like he was – there was no emotion. There was no anything. I mean, if you've watched his starts, I mean, the guy is, like, pitching with passion. And I guess that'll happen when you get cut by the Rockies and you bounce around the minors and – he looks good to me, and he added a cutter last year in the minor leagues. That's given him another offering to kind of neutralize both righties and lefties, give them something else to think of. He's really like a good junk baller is what's happening, and eventually it's going to catch up to him. People are going to start figuring it out, but right now he's going up there and just pitching well, and I think you can ride that for a little bit, especially in an only. So I like Chassin. We've talked enough about him. The other big guy was Tony Wolters, who coincidentally Rockies catcher. Is there anything there, or I don't think
well,
so.
Tony Wolters stole some bases.
Tony Wolters is the Aledmys Diaz of catchers.
I don't know what that means, but I like it.
I'd have to check the stats to see how many stolen bases he's allowed in. I want to say like 5 starts.
It was a lot.
You guys keep talking. I'm gonna find this information.
He's not a good defensive catcher.
He's a nice story. He's a guy who converted from infield and could be a decent backup. He's being pressed in as a starter, but yeah, there's even for NL only, there's not much there. He's a Coors player, so he's worth playing.
All right.
As long as Nick Hundley's out, but there's just not much to him.
Mike, Logan Verrett, what do you think so far? He's been filling in place of DeGrom, I believe.
And DeGrom will be back. Logan Verrett is the Tyler Lyons, since we're having analogy night. He's the Tyler Lyons of the Mets. He's a pitcher who on a number of second division teams could be a capable 5. He'd have a couple good outings, but if you saw him all the time, I think he'd probably put up a 4, maybe a 4-2. It's nice that he gets to pitch for a team where he just goes in there once in a while. He got the Phillies. It was a nice matchup. He did very well with it. Logan Verrett's fine in this emergency starter, relief role, send him back down to the minors. I think he'd be exposed in greater showings. I don't want to oversell the Dan Worthen, Mets pitching, influence on him, but that certainly helped as well.
Just to throw this out there, I think it's unclear whether it's a Jorge De La Rosa thing or whether it's a Tony Walters thing, but the last time Tony Walters started behind the plate, him and Jorge De La Rosa allowed 5 stolen bases.
Easier to steal off a lefty.
Well, that was the Reds too, wasn't it?
It was.
Billy got one, and it was the first time, and I forget how many years that a team stole 5 bases in an inning.
Fun fact: Billy Hamilton and David Ortiz have the same number of stolen bases this year.
Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah, what a world we live in.
You're gonna make me mad about Billy Hamilton, and you shouldn't do that.
I don't really know what's going on there. Watch, he'll steal like 30 in the month. Like
I hope
in
so.
June.
He could.
It's possible. The other guys on this list, a lot of bids over $30. $32, I don't know what it is about that number, but everyone loves it. Mike or Brett, either one of you guys, anyone interesting in this sort of $20 to $30 range that got picked up?
I think Charlie Morton's interesting.
I have not watched him yet.
He's Charlie Morton. You kind of know what you're getting, but, there's a chance he's not terrible. And for $32 out of a $1,000 budget, that's really all you can ask for.
Yeah, Tristan with the Pirates, Tristan rode him last year for – that did not sound very nice. We're not doing phrasing anymore. But Tristan carried him for a few weeks last year and did okay with him and then kind of left him in too long, and he had a terrible start. Morton, not Tristan. So you have to be careful with Morton. But, yeah, he's a pitcher who can be kind of streaky and do pretty well for you in an only for a while.
Yep. Anybody else in the NL?
No, I just kind of want to comment in general about those pitchers. That last year in week one, people were jumping over all over pitchers. This week was the week in the NL that people did it. I think this is where a lot of teams look at their staff and see a shortcoming or see a guy they want to add and do it. We talk about game theory a lot with these bids, and that's what you have to keep in mind. And that was part of why on Shaquin I bid the way I did, because I looked at it like, well, I want to get a pitcher. He's the one I want, but really it's more a matter of making sure I grab that arm before the free agent pool runs dry. And, in an NL only, with all these guys flying off the table, if you need a starter next week, it's going to be brutal.
Yep. Let's move to the AL side. We'll run through this quickly. Christian Vasquez was the big buy. Brett, you expressed some surprise, perhaps off the air before we started, that he was available in a bunch of leagues you're in. What are your thoughts on Vasquez? I know he's Johnny Bench behind the plate, but what do you think of him fantasy-wise?
Yeah. I don't think he's a particularly good hitter, but in well, in Tout Wars AL, and in, you know, we were talking offline, and in my score sheet league, I was able to grab him. But he, in those leagues where you need bulk and you need playing time, I think Vasquez is too valuable to the Red Sox not to play at least a good chunk of the time. So, he's someone who, if he needs to be rostered and is pretty attractive in any league that, you know, that starts more than, I'd say, 20 to 22 catchers. Mm-hmm.
I agree with that. I don't know about Vasquez offensively. We'll see.
I think he could hit an empty 260.
Right. That's fair. I wouldn't expect
that,
a ton
else. In that ballpark and with that lineup, there could be better counting stats than you think. And when you're looking for playing time in bulk, that's more of a factor.
Oswaldo Arcia went for $113. Mike, your thoughts?
There's a little bit of grasping here, although the Twins lineup right now, it was a depressing, you know, I put my funny comment about how depressing it is to write about only bids under Alexi Amarista, but in the NL. But yeah, the Twins are a depressing lineup to write about right now. You know, I agree with Brett about Nunez. You know, Nunez, who also went in the AL, it's you kind of want to go after the hot pitcher when you can, or I'm sorry, the hot hitter when you can. But on the whole, this is just a situation where there's a lot of ifs with Arcia. If Byron Buxton gets sent down, if the Twins change their philosophy on Arcia, some of the problem with Arcia last year, they didn't like his lack of athleticism and defense in the outfield, which is why he got buried. So I don't know what's changed. The Twins haven't changed as an organization. So I love Arcia and the power potential, but if he doesn't get the playing time, it's not going to happen for him.
I'm shocked that Arcia was not owned in AL Tout before this week.
Well, yeah, that's a
little legitimately
weird.
Shocked.
Huh.
But I think he's going to keep that job. I think he's going to play a corner spot the rest of the year. Eddie Rosario sucks. apologies to anybody who drafted him. I write my end game target column at the beginning of every year. That's one of my favorite columns to write. I put Arcia as a target for AL only leagues, and you know, this is exactly why. Arcia is a good hitter. He's not athletic, and he is I wouldn't say he's a terrible defensive outfielder. I'd say he's a shade below average.
You know what? I agree with all of that. This is a case, though, where it doesn't matter so much what we think. It matters what the Twins think. And they just don't seem to like him. I even worry that David Murphy, who they signed is in AAA, is going to come up and take some of those at-bats. And you know, I wrote about Murphy in the Fab Review as well. It would be a poor decision. I don't want to say terrible because that's hyperbole, but it wouldn't surprise me if the Twins made a poor decision when it came to Arcia, because they did that last year.
Well, yeah, they did, but the best way out of that is to hit, and he's been hitting.
Well, that's a good point. I just worry that any kind of slump whatsoever is just going to be the excuse for them to bench him and make him disappear again. I hope you're right.
Sure, but that same argument goes for Buxton too. That same argument goes for everybody on that team. I wouldn't be surprised if they demoted Byung-ho Park at some point. I wouldn't be. There's almost no one on that roster who I would be surprised if they demoted.
Well,
They can't actually demote Arcia because he's out of options.
Yeah,
so
Joe Mauer is making like, you know, a 180 whatever million dollars on that contract, so they're stuck with him. Well, he's done well, so I shouldn't.
Joe Mauer, I think, is leading the American League in on base percentage.
He probably is.
Not surprising. anyone else to talk about here? I like Ryan Dull in an AL only. He's pitched like 10 scoreless innings to start the year. He's strange as all get out. He does not walk anyone. Pitches for Oakland. I don't think there's any chance he's getting saves, but he's somebody who can help your rates in an only. Anybody else you guys want to talk about, or are we good?
No, I think we're good. And
no,
it looks like
that's it for me.
It looks like Mauer is 1/1000th of a point behind Jose Bautista in on base percentage in the American League. So he's second.
I think Bautista just passed him too. Bautista's coming into tonight has gotten on base in every game.
He's really good.
He's also really, really old. Sorry, that's dynasty related.
He's not that old. Come on.
He probably is a year or two at this level before he starts to drop off.
That lineup's terrifying.
We've heard that about other people though.
David Ortiz.
Yeah.
No, Adrian Beltre. Yeah, we can. That's probably a separate discussion about right. conditioning and the modern player and how the definition of that is changing for some.
Yeah, and Ortiz is a perfect example of this, and this is absolutely not the topic that I know we're getting into, but the more power a hitter has with terrible English. The low strikeout sluggers are guys who I will buy well into their 30s in dynasty leagues because I think those are the guys that hang on longer. Bautista is one of them. Ortiz is a good example of that. Even Beltre to an extent, although I don't put him in that tier.
See, this is why we like Nomar Mazara, because controlling the strike zone, commanding the plate, I mean, that's probably the biggest, most important skill you can have. And that's probably the one that deteriorates the least as you age. Yeah, it's something that doesn't just go away. And I think with free swingers, it becomes more difficult as you get older.
I know. Swinging a lot is a young man's game.
It's true. All right, so how do you guys want to do this? I think we'll just go kind of around the room one by one. So what we did at Baseball Prospectus this week was we ran our Things We Believe In series. Myself and J.J. Jansen's had one. Greg Wellemeyer and J.P. Breen have one that's up now. There's, I think, another one coming out later this week. But we've had a bunch of them, and we've had some pretty good ones.
I think Mike and I are running one. I think that will be up by the time this podcast is.
I have like another paragraph to write that I'm going to review it.
I have not even started it.
Well, why don't we begin that process
when you are
now.
Listening to this, I will have decided who my picks are going to be, and they will be written.
See, we're going to go hashtag process right now, and Brett's going to write his on the air. It's going to be, what is it? That's not a podcast for your eyes, but it's the inverse of that, I think.
It's an article for your ears.
Very true. An article for your ears. I love it. All right. Since, Brett, you're probably going to need a minute to prepare here, I'm going to go to Mike first. Mike, what is something you firmly believe in that you've seen over the first 2+ weeks of the season now?
Well, I'll give you the one that I'm watching now. I believe that the Phillies rotation, or at least the top end of that rotation, is legitimate. I've watched them pitch. You know, I know that we've seen some struggles now in his last outing from Vincent Velasquez and from Aaron Nola, but all three of these guys are, you know, and I think Christopher Crawford said he hates this word, so I'm going to use it in case he's listening. Those guys are shoving. They are all pitching in a way that is above and beyond what we were expecting. And based on what I've seen and I think less was so with Nola because we knew he was good, but they've made changes to their game and changed their approach that go beyond some lucky numbers or, you know, just a performance that, you know, is well above what we'd expect. Obviously, Velasquez isn't going to strike out 16 hitters every game, but it's, these are players that if you were targeting them or looking at them as low-end options in a deep mixed or as someone you wouldn't even consider, it's time to go beyond that and look at them for more.
Yep, so we didn't want to do sort of bold predictions. So this was the series that we chose to do. I think it's been pretty cool. I agree with that, especially with Eichhoff. I think he's been fantastic. That curveball. We how many times must we have talked about it at BP over the offseason? Like a million times, feels like.
Well, the funny thing about Eichhoff, though, and you know, I was talking to Kate Morrison about this in a G-chat, you know, because she covers the, you know, she's one of our prospect writers at Prospectus, and she's in Texas, and she writes about the Rangers.
Right.
Eichhoff was throwing the curve in the minors in 2014, but his pitch last year for the Phillies was a slider. You know, it was a harder breaking ball. It was a different classification. And now he's back to that curve, you know, and I think the Phillies had an opportunity to look at him this spring and work with him. You know, something I wanted to mention, and you know, I was doing a little research with this piece. The Phillies' pitching coach is Bob McClure, and McClure has been there for a couple of years, but they brought in somebody, and I'm blanking on his name, and Brett or George, if you know who this is, they brought somebody in from the Brewers.
Oh.
I'm not off on my Phillies. Yeah, I'm going to find it because I know who this is, and I actually had it up before, and now, of course, I don't. But you know, he's somebody who had some success with the younger arms on the Brewers, like I think 2 or 3 years ago. And it's possible that he's done the same thing in Philadelphia, and that's some of what you're seeing here. So, the point being for fantasy, though, this is the kind of thing, you know, we always talk about. I'm sure all you guys on, you know, on Twitter and on Baseball Prospectus get bombarded with questions of, you know, is this guy for real? Is this a fluke? You know, can someone sustain this? And everybody always points to numbers.
Oh,
numbers are great. What you really want to be looking at is you want to be looking at performance markers. You want to be looking at things that are sustainable. And so what you're saying, George, about, you know, Eichhoff's curveball, that's something to me, if he can keep throwing that pitch for strikes. You know, he doesn't have a dominant fastball, but he doesn't need to have it. He just needs to continue throwing that curve, you know, for strikes and throwing his other off-speed pitches for strikes, and the fastball will be fine.
Rick Kranitz, by the way, was the former pitching coach for the Brewers the last couple of years.
Thank you. Rick Kranitz. Kranitz is who it was, yeah.
Yep. Brett, what do you believe so far this season?
I think that we are finally seeing the Rick Porcello that people were hoping they were going to see for 5 or 6 years, and probably that Ben Charrington was hoping to see before he got thrown out of the building.
Poor Ben.
You know, Porcello is a funny guy because, you know, we all know the history, we all know the pedigree, we all know how young he was when he debuted, and you know, he's been a lot of things over the course of his career. He's been a low strikeout guy. He's been a, you know, a big regression candidate. He's been a big regression candidate the other way. You know, he's pretty much run the gamut of stuff that you can be called as a pitcher. But you know, and this is not an argument solely about Christian Vasquez, although Christian Vasquez does have a little bit to do with this. You know, Porcello is the kind of pitcher who I think could benefit from a really good framing catcher more than most. He doesn't have dominant stuff. He's a big kind of sinker cutter guy, and he tries to live on the edges of the zone a little bit. And I think, you know, having Vasquez back there is a boon for him, but he's missing bats, and you know, that's not something that he's historically done in the past. He had another outing tonight, struck out another 9 batters, that gives him 24 for the season in 3 starts. And you know, given the offense behind him in Boston, and even given the defense, it's not a bad defense. And you can, George, correct me if I'm wrong, but in the outsider's view, is it doesn't look like a bad defense. I mean, Jackie Bradley Jr. is amazing, but you know, everyone, even the infield defense is not above average, but I think it's as opposed to last year where they were trying to squeeze a bunch of people in at positions that wanted to squeeze them out. You know, it seems like a much better fit all around the diamond.
Yeah, I mean, without Hanley and left, no Castillo and right, no Sandoval, who couldn't get to anything at third. Travis Shaw is not great, but he's an upgrade. And Hanley Ramirez has been much better than expected. And this is a point to you, Brett, and I think, Mike, you may have been on this too. But Hanley Ramirez, good call. He has looked good so far.
It was mostly Brett, I have to say.
Yeah, that was we talked a bunch about him in, like, January and February. And so far, hit the nail on the head, so...
you'll have to excuse me while I take my victory lap after 2 weeks.
Although with Hanley and Labor, I both of us couldn't believe that he was just, you know, not to, you know, rehash this and take a victory lap in April, but we couldn't believe that he was sitting there where he was sitting at that point in the draft.
Yeah, I mean we've gotten calls wrong too, but I think that one stands out as something we actually were right on that. I don't know if everyone felt that way. I myself was a little skeptical. So I wrote my piece about, I already talked a little bit about it, Nomar Mazara being a four-category kind of stud. The developments with Steven Strasburg and Noah Syndergaard with their sliders, there's a lot of cool stuff with those, couple charts. Then I wrote about Rich Hill as well. But I'm going to give a bonus one right now, and then we'll go back to you guys for another one before we wrap up. But there was a really cool piece by Russell Carlton that went up on Monday as part of his baseball therapy series. At BP. It's called The One About Exit Velocity, nice Friends reference. And really the overall point of the article was he asked the question, how long until we can believe in a hitter's exit velocity? Because everyone's talking about StatCast. You're going to see a lot of fantasy series focused on that, a lot of people talking about that data. You know, so-and-so has got an exit velocity of 94 or whatever. So there's a ton of math involved, and I suggest you go read it. But to summarize, Russell Carlton found that average exit velocity becomes reliable, meaning it's statistically significant, right around 40 balls in play, which is about a month's worth of data, which is less than you'd think. So I think part of his research shows, and it's the same for pitchers as well, that data becomes a little more reliable around 40 balls in play. But an interesting wrinkle of that was he found that as time goes on and you have more data, becomes less reliable because pitchers change over time due to injury, pitch usage, all kinds of stuff. So he found that it's a pretty good indicator of a guy's current skill, but it's not entirely predictive. It's not something you can really do as like a baseline aside from like a league average. So I just think that stuff is pretty interesting. And when I dug into some of the data just tonight, I found Danny Valencia is 13th among all hitters in average exit velocity at 94.4 miles per hour, and that's on 38 balls in play, so it's not, you know, a small sample or anything like that. The weird thing is he has just two extra base hits, and he's hitting .286, .340 on base, slugging .347. So I was just intrigued by that. He actually got injured tonight, but I think he's a guy where if you're looking at this data and going who's hitting the ball hard and just getting a little bit unlucky, he's a guy who stands out to me in that department. So that was a cool piece. Everybody should go check that out. Mike, back to you. What else you got?
Well, let's see. I'm going to go with one that's kind of obvious, but since we talked about this other player before, I'll go with the obvious one. I am picking Jake Arrieta to repeat and be the Cy Young Award winner. I know that some people, and to make this a bold prediction, I couldn't just say he'd be good again because that's kind of boring. So I'm going to say he's going to win the Cy Young. We've talked about this on this show before. A lot of people crowd regression with him. They looked at an 80% strand rate and a BABIP that was a little bit lower than he's done in the past. But I've said this on Twitter a few times. I wonder if the people who have crowd regression with him have watched him pitch. You know, we're talking about a combination of a pitcher with really strong stuff, who's very smart about how he uses it, and Ryan Watt of BP Wrigleyville and Baseball Prospectus has pointed out that Arrieta is even fooling with a change, which is something that he hasn't done in the past. He only did it once in his start against the Angels, but I can see him showing that more and more as the season goes along. He's someone who since 2014 has a, and this is coming into this, so it may have changed, a 2.31 DRA. That's a second-best number in the majors, and he has a second-best DRA-derived WAR behind Clayton Kershaw. I get the urge to, you know, prop up Noah Syndergaard with the start he's had, and Kershaw's Kershaw, but I'm going to say that Jake Arrieta could very well put up a year where he puts up a 2-2 or a 2-3 RA, wins a lot of games on a team that is, you know, looks great to me, even though the offense has struggled, and repeats and wins a Cy Young again.
He might be a space alien along with Kershaw. I don't know.
Well, he's a condition, you know, he's a conditioning freak too. If you've read anything about the, you know, the off-season regimen and his regimen during the season, you know, this is not somebody who takes his craft lightly, which, you know, I admire the hell out of that.
Brett, what's your last thing you believe in?
My last thing I believe in, I will say, don't let the first start fool you. Steven Matz is going to be a top 20 starter this year. I think, you know, the first start was an aberration. He hadn't pitched in 10 days. He was great in the first inning and then just lost the zone a little bit after getting squeezed by the umpires, then left a couple balls over the plate. But, you know, his start in Cleveland showed exactly the kind of starter that he is. You know, the Mets are going to need him with DeGrom banged up and with, you know, Harvey not looking quite like Harvey, even though I think Harvey will absolutely be fine. But I think that even, you know, even with him probably only getting to about 175, 180 innings, I think the strikeouts and the ratios are going to be enough to get him there, even without the bulk of innings.
Yeah, I was gonna say people freaked out after that start, and it was like, look, he hadn't pitched in 10 days. What were you expecting? Like, that happens sometimes. So that's a great point. So anybody got anything else, or were you ready to take a break? Good.
I think I can leave my last one for people actually reading the article, just so they're not, you know, thinking it's, you know, we're not reading them the whole thing.
Right. So as you're listening to this, Brett and Mike's things they believe are up at Baseball Prospectus. You should go check those out. Mine are up from earlier in the week, and there's a bunch of other ones from the entire BP Fantasy team. So I'm really proud of the work we've been doing this year. I think our team's fantastic, and I love the stuff they're putting out. So go check it out at Baseball Prospectus. We're going to take a quick break and come back and wrap things up. We're back. Thank you for listening to episode 87 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy podcast. Subscribe today with a one-year premium membership to read all of us and the entire BP Fantasy team on baseballprospectus.com. Sign up for a super premium membership. You get access to the Bat Signal, our personalized fantasy answering service. Send us a question. We'll get back to you within 12 hours. Don't forget, follow us on Twitter. I'm at George Bissell. Brett is at Dynasty Guru. Mike is at Mike Gianella. Email us, flagsflyforever at baseballprospectus.com. Rate, subscribe, review on iTunes. And that's going to do it for Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella. This is George Bissell saying thanks for listening. Until next week, good night, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Good night.